People sometimes ask me if I became the Ron Van Dam Show announcer because I love what Ron does and I love his comedy. Well, no. It's because Ron broke me out of a Tijuana prison back in 82 and smuggled me across the border in a suitcase in the trunk of a Yugo. And I still owe him for that. Muchas gracias, mi amigo. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Thank you. I don't know what I'm thanking you for. You didn't do anything, but thank you anyway. Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I swear it is. Look, see, it is. Anyway, thanks for being here. If there was a police lineup, I'd be the one on the left, just so you know, for the near future. You know, interestingly enough, the one store where no one ever seems to shoplift is the dollar store, because there's kind of no point. It's only a dollar. I'm sorry, $1.25. I'm sorry. Hey, the dollar store went up 25%, and that's a lot. That's a lot. All right. That's enough. That'll be enough opening stuff. Let's get to the meat of the program. Let's get to the baloney of the show. How are you, by the way? This is the only talk show that will actually ask you how you are, making believe that it cares about how you're doing. We don't care. Nobody cares. I say this all the time, but it's worth mentioning all the time. When someone comes up to you and says, "How are you doing?" they don't care. It's just something you say. You're not supposed to respond to it. It's a rhetorical question. If someone says to you, "How you doing?" you respond by saying, whatever. That's all you say. You say, fine, just go away. Or if someone says to you, how was your weekend? You say, would this change your life if I told you? Do you have any great interest in how my weekend actually was? Here, I'll turn it around on you. How was your weekend? And then they always like go, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Or, wow, I didn't expect you to turn that around on me. That's a burden I can't handle." Now, we're also pleasant to each other. Small talk. It is quite small. There's no meat in it. There's nothing going on. How's everything? How's your sister? Fine. How's your brother? He's fine. And now do you think that I care? No, I guess not. It doesn't go anywhere. It just doesn't go anywhere. You gotta talk about something where you're discovering, or you're getting information, you're sharing ideas. You know, just like, "Well, how are you?" That doesn't go anywhere. It's not an icebreaker. It doesn't break any ice. There's no ice being broken. Anyway, welcome to the program. Now that I've given you an idea of where I stand on things. I didn't talk about this previously, but a couple of months ago I got a letter from the government. And whenever you get something official from the federal government, especially, your immediate reaction is, "Oh my God, can I make bail? call everybody. I won't be seeing you for 20 years. I'll be in a prison somewhere." Dropping soap. I'll be dropping soap. That's what they call prison. Dropping soap. I'll be dropping soap. That's not true. I just made that up. Anyway, so I get this official thing from I think it was from the state, which is just as bad. And I open it up, and inside is an invitation for jury duty. I use the word invitation very incorrectly. It was a jury duty thing. have you ever done jury duty? Don't answer. I can't hear you. This is just, you know, something you can answer to yourself. Have you ever done jury duty? Oh my God, there's Omicron. There are two different kinds of people on the planet. This is how I break it down. Those that like to do jury duty and those that go into a panic. I'm one of the ones that go into a panic. Well, that's no big deal. Another reason to go into a panic. I don't like to be sequestered. I don't like to be confined. I don't like to be told where I have to be and when. I went through that in 12 years of public school. You have to get up in the morning. You have to go to the school. You have to sit in a chair. You have to listen to people talk at you. And then when the clock reaches like 3 o'clock or so, or whatever it was, 3:15, you can go home. You're released at that point. And I want you to do this for every day for 12 years. Oh, no. Well, no, even on weekends? All right, not on weekends. But otherwise, yeah, we're going to send you home with homework. I mean, this is we're going to break you. We're going to break you is what we're going to do. I hate to be confined. So I get this jury duty thing, and it's amazing to me. If I don't appear for jury duty, there could be a penalty or a summons involved to appear in court. And yet, Trump does all this amazing stuff and nothing ever happens to him. Well, all men are created equal. No, they're not. No, they're not. Stop it with that all men are created equal, and that women too, obviously. They're not all created equal, and you know that. That's not the foundation of this country, because it ain't true. It never was. It still isn't. Men weren't created equal. Women weren't created equal. If you're different for a different skin color, you're not created equal. If you don't have much money, you're not created equal. So stop with this. Stop with this created equal stuff. You're building a fantasy world of utopia, and it's not even close to it. So stop it. Anyway. So they want me to go to jury duty. They want me to go to a courthouse, and then I do some research, and it's going to be pure hell. In the state in which I live, Massachusetts, they say that they do jury duty, picking jury duty things by lottery. And I thought, well, you do everything in this state by lottery, apparently. If that's the case, this will be my seventh jury duty request in my lifetime. That means that about every 3 years since I graduated from college, they've asked me to do jury duty. That's picking on me. That's picking on me. I win that lottery apparently all the time. When I play lotteries in convenience stores or that Keno crap, I don't win anything ever. So how can I be so lucky to be chosen for jury duty in that lottery, but be so unlucky when it comes to money? Anyway, I've been to jury duty a couple of times already in my lifetime. I know how to get out of it if I want to, although we're not supposed to talk about that. That's not a right thing to do, but it's true. I try to get out no matter how. And they don't take the hint. Why are you picking me if I don't want to go? Why do you keep hounding me if I don't want to be there? Don't you want somebody on a jury who wants to be there? As opposed to somebody like me? You don't want me on a jury duty thing. You don't. I'm just going to fuck it all up. So don't even ask me. If they have a lottery and my name comes up, whoever's picking my name out of the barrel should say, oh, it's Van Damme. Don't bother. He's just going to give us grief. He's going to whine and cry, and we're going to have to release him anyway. So, like, why are we bothering with this guy? And I don't know the answer to that. So I go to this jury duty thing about 3 years, 4 years ago. I did jury duty. They called me into this courthouse thing. And by the way, when I walk into the courthouse, I have to basically disrobe like I'm getting a physical at my doctor's office. I have to take my belt off. Only time I've ever taken my belt off in front of other people was like when sex was involved. I have to take my shoes off and my belt off. And this is so I can walk into a location that I don't even want to be in the first place. So I get in there. By the way, first I have to park my car. I always go to jury duty in towns and cities that I don't even live in. And I have to pay for parking. What the hell is that? You're inviting me for jury duty. You don't even give me a parking space? And then on top of it, to really like grind it into my face, I get into this jury pool room, which is like 50 other people who don't want to be there either. That's what we all have in common. And then they show us a video, and there's some judge in the video saying, jury duty is the most precious thing you can do for your country. We thank you so much for your duty, for participating in our system. You make this country great. We cannot thank you enough for being here for jury duty. And then at the same time, they can't thank me enough, but they won't pay for my parking. Well, that pisses me off immediately. So I'm sitting there, and you sit in this jury pool room, and there's no pool. There's no pool. There's no lifeguard. There's nothing like that. There's no water involved. And you sit there like for hours for no reason whatsoever. Isn't that called imprisonment? I didn't do anything wrong. Why are you making me sit in the room for 3 hours? And then they call me, they call like 20 of us down to a particular courtroom just after. We're released for lunch. We're sitting there for 3-4 hours. Nothing's happening. And then they say, now you have like 45 minutes to go get lunch. Oh, great. You're paying for it? No, you pay for the parking. You pay for your lunch. Oh, God. So I go outside. I don't smoke, but, you know, outside of a courthouse, everybody smokes. So I lit one up. Anyway, so I go back go back into the courthouse, and I feel like I'm under arrest. I'm under arrest. I got to take my belt off again and my shoes and my underpants. It's really embarrassing. I go back up to this jury pool room. Then they call me down. They call everybody down to this courtroom. And we're sitting there. And this is where they do have a trial for us to possibly be jurors in. And I'm getting nervous because I have a dentist appointment in a couple of days. And I can't be stuck in a... I can't. I've used that excuse before. Ron, why can't you do jury... I have a dental appointment. Oh, well, I didn't know that. Anyway, so they call me into this courtroom, and then this bailiff, and I don't know what that means, this man with a gun tells us all to stand up, please rise, and a judge enters the room. And that pisses me off. Why the hell should I stand up for a guy wearing a robe? Walking into a room. What is it with these robe things? Apparently, as soon as you wear a robe, people got to stand up and respect you. I've worn a robe coming out of my shower before. Nobody stood up for me. But here's a grown person, adult, happened to be a guy, wearing a robe, and everybody has to stand up. I don't know why. Well, this is the judge. This is the king of the courtroom. What? It's a guy that went to school for a profession. Why am I standing up? It shows respect. This is not right. I don't think that's the way this is supposed to go. I don't think you're supposed to stand. I don't know about that. Anyway, so the guy walks into the room, very pompous, and says, please be seated. Well, that's where I was before. Why did you make me stand up? I was seated. See, they're telling you to do things. They're telling you to do things. The bailiff says, please rise, but didn't say Simon says. So I didn't rise. I know how that game goes. So the judge is there, and he says, we have a case here, and this is a molestation case, a child molestation case, which doesn't sound like fun to me. And he says, we're going to call you up one by one and do a quick interview up here at the bench. I didn't see any bench. I just saw this big desk with the guy with the robe and a couple of lawyers. And apparently I'm going to a bench now. And they call me up front. They call my name, juror number 72. And I raise my hand and I go up to the thing. And the judge says, is there any reason why you cannot be a juror? And the prosecuting attorney and defense attorney are standing there because they choose who the jurors are. And I said, is there any reason I can't be a juror? Is there any reason that I would be? Is how I answered that. They didn't think that was funny. They had no sense of humor. I said, okay, here are a couple of reasons why I wouldn't be a good juror. I hate lawyers. Anybody who's accused of anything probably did it. I have to pee every like hour on the hour because I can't hold my bladder. Other reasons, I know people, and you said it was a child molestation case. I know a child who I think is being molested, and I will not stand for it. I just came up with a lot of reasons, you know, like I don't have enough money to pay for the parking beyond 3 hours. During the lunch break, I had some bad clams and I'm feeling very queasy. And when I'm queasy, I tend to, soil, the chairs in the courtroom. I just had such a list of reasons. I don't believe in the court system. I kind of do, I kind of don't. You know, I just threw that in there. I'm a talk show host, so I'm a very opinionated person. And the judge actually stopped me there. All the other excuses were very feasible. The judge stopped me and said, you know, you don't want to do jury duty. You don't think you can be a juror because you're very opinionated? I'm a judge and I'm very opinionated. And I responded by saying, yeah, and you can't sit on a jury. They didn't like that. I was trying to be nice. I was trying to be familiar and witty. I don't think they like witty jurors on a child molestation case. Anyway, I was released. And rather than say thank you, I said good. And I left the courtroom, and I left the courthouse, and I swore I'd never go back again. Yet they continue to choose me to do jury duty. I don't understand it. I guess they don't have a good memory. In any event, you know, here's there are people that like to be jurors. There are people that are totally impartial, are really good jurors. They have nothing else to do, so they want to be there. Damn it. Choose jurors who want to be there. Do you think you're going to get anywhere choosing people on a jury who don't want to be there?
I don't know if they're guilty or innocent. I have no idea, but I'll go along with the rest of you so I can get the hell out of here.
You don't want that attitude. Well, the easiest way to get out of jury duty is just to become an asshole just like me, and you know, you'll be out of there before you even know it. Yeah, that's my opinion. Jury duty should be for people who want jury duty. There's enough of them. They could be professional jurors. I don't see anything wrong with that. The least you can do is pay for their parking. We have an interesting guest coming up. Do you have acid reflux? I think we all do from time to time. When is that a serious thing and when isn't it? It's probably serious when you can't stand it no more. But what do we do about it? How are people treated and what's actually happening there? That's going to be our conversation with a doctor today. But before we do that, we have this very short commercial break.
Hello, this is Father Mike Slannery from the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church here in town, and I'm excited to tell you about a thrilling new addition to our monthly Friday night bingo game lineup. In addition to classic favourites like Coverall and Four Corners, we'll now be adding Full Contact Bingo. That's right, Full Contact. That's where the friendly community game you love meets the hard-hitting action of football and hockey that you crave. Is Mrs. Smith about to call bingo before you? Hit her with a cross check or crash her into the boards. I should mention that all full contact games will take place in the street hockey rink behind the parish function hall where the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Fighting Sons of Leviticus hold their matches. Protective gear is recommended and weapons are not allowed. And if you feel bad about taking out a friend or neighbour so you can win a few bucks at the bingo, I will be on hand to take your confession. That all starts next Friday night at the Parish Hall at the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church, 27 Eucharist Way, right downtown. We'll see you there.
Dr. John Pandolfino joins us now. He's Chief of Gastroenterology and Hepatology at Northwestern Medicine. It's a lot to say for me there, John. Thanks for being with us today. We're talking about acid reflux and perhaps a technical name for that, what we call a disease. Before we get started, thanks for being here. And secondly, I don't know the difference if I have some something needs attention or just a Tums or some acid reflux over the counter thing. Are there varying degrees of this situation?
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad to be here to talk about GERD because I think it's a pretty important topic, and a lot of people have it, and they don't really know, or yeah, they don't know what it is. You know, and GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease, is a fancy name, is really what people get when they feel heartburn. Uh-huh. It's movement of stomach contents up into your esophagus and your chest,
yes,
and then sometimes even into your throat and maybe into your lungs where people get chronic cough,
yeah,
and a sore throat. So it is a problem that people may not initially, you know, think is related to the reflux disease, uh-huh, but certainly can be. And a lot of times it's a process of elimination. So, you know, what you're saying is true. How do people know when they have it? And it can be difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that feeling in my throat maybe once every month or so, and yeah, if I eat certain foods, yeah, it's going to hurt a little bit, and I have to pop something in my mouth. But I don't know. I guess the question is, what's the definition of chronic?
Yeah, that's a good point too, because like you said, you take a Tums or an antacid every mm-hmm. now and then. That's not as big a deal, but if you start to notice that the symptoms are becoming more chronic, meaning that, you know, once or twice a week you're starting to have to use antacid, maybe mm-hmm. even more than that, you start to notice that it's affecting your quality of life. I mean, mm-hmm. in particular for you who's talking all day,
yeah,
you know, if your voice starts to become really raspy and you start to get more hoarse, a lot more discomfort, you're finding it hard to finish your day. I mean, I think that's really where, you know, people need to start thinking about talking to their primary care doctor about it.
Yeah. Besides the discomfort or the quality of life because of, you know, raspy throat, whatever, are there serious ramifications to not doing anything about it? Is there damage being done?
Yeah, so certainly because reflux has acid and digestive enzymes, it can irritate your esophagus,
right,
and it can irritate your throat. It can cause ulcers and bleeding. It can cause strictures, which are scars that can actually block food from getting into your stomach, and that can be a life-threatening problem. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there is this risk of cancer of the esophagus, which is associated with GERD.
Oh.
But I don't want to alarm the audience. You know, that's rare to happen with gastroesophageal reflux disease, but it's certainly something we look at and we're certainly thinking about.
Okay. So besides just taking these little over-the-counter antacids, when it becomes more consistent, that's when you see someone like yourself. What is done at that point in order to, is there a diagnosis that would come about?
Yeah, so when people are not, you know, are coming in with these significant symptoms more frequent, probably the first step that happens is an upper endoscopy, which is, you know, a camera on the end of a tube that goes down your throat into your esophagus to look around. And really what you're doing there is you're looking for potential injury, ulcers, and you're also looking for something that might be a pre-malignant, meaning that something that happens before cancer that we can fix and address right away. And if we identify that, we just watch you very closely and you'll never get cancer.
Oh, so you're
talking about... really the endoscopy.
Okay, so that's
the first test.
I mean, most of us are familiar with colonoscopies because at some age you should have that done. So this is just up there as opposed to down there.
Exactly. Not the different scope, but definitely the same concept.
Okay. All right. What happens if you find that there is something that needs to be treated? Is that normally done at a facility?
Yeah, so if you're doing the endoscopy and say, for instance, I see that you have some scarring or stricturing that's blocking food, I can put a balloon in there and stretch that out and fix that almost immediately.
Oh.
If I see that you have significant ulcers or injury, I can put you on medications and heal that. And then certainly if we find that you have pre-malignant changes and that those put you at a little bit higher risk, we can actually do something called ablation, which means we literally kind of shave it or cut it out or burn it out with some techniques.
Okay. So this is treatable if you know that you actually have something to treat.
Exactly. You see your primary care doctor and your gastroenterologist, they'll protect you from getting anything bad.
Okay. Now, you guys at Northwestern University, we talk to you a lot. You do a lot of forward-thinking things over there, I understand.
Yeah, we try to really approach everything with a more precision approach or a personalized approach, and I think that's really kind of the model of how medicine should be practiced.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Okay, well, you've opened our eyes to this. Well, not particularly the eyes, but you know what I mean. Yeah, it's important to know. I think we all know some people that have these, I guess, disorders, as I guess is what you would call it, or extreme discomfort. So it's good to bring it up and to talk about it. Where would we go for more information? Website, perhaps, that has some of this information.
Yeah, so certainly at our website at www.nm.org, where you can go in and plug in GERD. You'll be taken to our GERD website. And at that site, there is a chatbot tool and our assessment tool where you can answer a few questions, get a little bit of an idea of what you may need and get referred to a practitioner if you require that. There's also some nice information regarding reflux disease at that particular site. And I think, you know, we really want to focus on the entire person. And, you know, if you come to Northwestern with reflux, you may leave with a referral to a behavioral specialist.
Right.
You may leave with a referral to a surgeon, and everything in between. So we really try to use precision medicine when we treat the patient.
Could be something as simple as diet and exercise and losing some weight.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, once again, we start small and start with the easy stuff. If we identify something that we can change, we'll definitely do that. We also address the relationship between stress and these GI symptoms. A lot of people are under significant stress.
Yeah.
Their GI tract can get significantly overwhelmed.
Hello. I think you're talking about everybody now. All right. One more time, that would be www.nm.org. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, sir. Pleasure speaking to you, doctor.
Thank you very much.
Well, that'll do it for me today. You've been wonderful. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program, but until then, I wish you peace.